Accession number 20306, Reel 1.
Ray Robinson, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Hull.
Which year was this?
1926.
Did you grow up in Hull?
I did.
Which school did you go to?
Lincoln Street.
Whereabouts is that?
It's off Wincombe Lee, which runs alongside the River Hull.
And how old were you when you left school?
14 years old.
So that war had already started then?
Yes, 1939, back end of 1939.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, I did actually. I believe it was on a Sunday.
How did you feel about it at that age?
Well, at that age, very exciting. I think the first thing I did was run out, and because all the young lads who I was to play with then, they was all jumping about and, you know, very excited.
Did the war affect you at first?
No, not really. To me, during my teen years during the war, it was a very exciting time because in Hull we had a lot of air raids and there was also something exciting going on.
What do you remember about the Blitz in Hull?
Oh, my biggest memory was the two nights Blitz in the April, I believe it was 42. At that time, my mother was a very, very scared woman in those days. And in Hull, they had a scheme where you used to put special buses on, I think it would be about 6 o'clock every night. And they used to take these people out in to Beverley and Cottingham, away from the centre of Hull. And at that time, I used to go to my father's sister, who lives more or less on the outskirts, which is Stone Ferry. And that certain night I'd gone there, I used to play with my cousin, you know. And the air raids went, and we was in a shelter at top of Lorraine Street. And, of course, being a young chap, it didn't bother me much. I could get my head down at times in between the noise and the banging and bombing and everything. But my first impression was when the air raids finished and the sirens went, which would be possibly, I don't know, maybe very early morning, 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, whatever. And Storm Ferry along the river, which was not just a matter of a few yards opposite, was just ablaze. All the oil mills which were situated along there was all in flames. And looking towards the centre of the city, the whole city was ablaze with fire and smoke. And that was my worst impression of the war. And at that time I was working against the pier, Blanket Row. And I walked home from there to see what was happening at home. And most of the roads and streets was blocked with debris from the bombed houses. But I managed to get to where I lived, down Lockwood Street at that time. There was nobody at home. All the windows had gone in. My brothers was in the forces and there was only my father, and he'd gone out where I don't know, he might have still gone to work and the doctor tried to get to work. And I managed to see one of the wardens, and he told me, I asked him where my mother would most likely be, and he told me there was down Princess Avenue, they'd gone to a church, there was in a church. And I managed to get there, and cutting through, which was Waterloo Street there, I passed a big shelter which was down the terrace what had took a direct hit. And I believe everybody had been killed in that shelter then. But then I managed to get down Princess Avenue and made contact with Mother in the church. And we stayed in there over till the next night, which was another night of heavy bombing. Then when we went home that day, the house was, well, it was inhabitable really, you know, the soot had came down and no windows in and, you know, a bit of a mess. So I think we managed there, but then we moved within a day or two to another house down Fountain Road, which had escaped the worst of the bombing.
And you say your mother's nerves were affected.
Oh, yeah, she was very nervous. Well, I think I always said that the war shortened my mother's life, because she was a beautiful woman and she looked very young even in the 50s. To me, she looked very young. And in even the 60s, she looked very young. She was lively. She had a facilities that was, you know, normal, very good. But I think with the bombing, and of course when I got called up, she had three sons in the war, you see. And my father at the time, he took a very bad turn. As I say, he was wounded in the First World War and gassed. He used to cough his lungs up every morning. I didn't need the alarm when my father was up. He used to go in the yard underneath the tap, cold tap for a wash, before he went on the docks. But he used to cough his lungs up there.
I think you said he was in the East Yorkshires in the First World War.
I found out, I didn't know that until about 2 years ago, until my eldest brother told me. But as I say, there was no... The papers, what he had, I think my eldest sister, when we moved from Fountain Road... we moved down here, this was 25 years ago, in 1975. Well, there was only my two brothers at home there. My sister, eldest sister lived next door. She used to look after him, you know, clean for him and everything. And when they moved, I think she took charge of the moving, you know, helped him. And she took all the papers of my father's, all the records and everything. She died suddenly about 8 or 9 years ago. And of course, she had two sons and a daughter, and they must have took all these papers with them, so we're left with nothing really. I would love to know what battalion he served in and what area he served in. And well, I say, I know most of them served at Uppywood, and which we are building in Hull. I don't know if you know about that. The council have leased some land where they're planting an actual wood there now.
But were you worried about the bombing in the war?
No, it didn't really worry me really, you know. At that age you're more excited.
Did any bombs actually fall near you?
Oh yes, we had one there. Yeah, because we had the railway just opposite us, the old Hull and Barnsley Railway, where they used to fetch all the coal in at that time from Selby in that area. And of course, railway lines from above. Yes, we had a few bombs in the area. We had a few when we moved. We ended up down Northumberland Avenue. That's where I got called up from. Because I would be 16 when we got more or less, well, I say we got bombed out of Lockwood Street, which was on the next street, and we had a stick of bombs down there, full stick. Most of them was unexploded.
Do you remember what your various addresses were in the
place? Lockwood Street, I believe that was number 11 Lockwood Street. It was the last house on the street, leaving the town, because the streets leading from the centre of the town all used to that at number one, going to the high number. And then we moved to Northumberland Avenue, and the address was number 68. I remember that. And I got called up from there, from Northumberland Avenue.
Where's Northumberland Avenue?
Do you know? Well, it runs about, I would say, 300 yards as a crow flies from the River Hull, from Wincombe Lee. Wincombe Lee starts from the old town, from Hare Street, the Drypool area, and it runs right along up to Bankside, Clough Road. It runs along parallel with the river. And Fountain Road was, Fountain Road was the main road which Northumberland Avenue run across.
Now, can you tell me about going in the army, please?
Well, as I say, I was 17 on the D-Day, 6th of June. On the 15th of June, I was 18. On the 27th of June, I was called up. I was called up, I was to report to Carlisle. So I left Hull Station on the morning of Thursday, the 27th of June. Train went to Leeds. From Leeds, went over the old Pennine Railway to Carlisle, which I thought was going to be my depot. But when we left the train, there was old army trucks lined up on the one of the platform the areas with the HES drivers. So there was loading us onto these trucks. I was one of the last. I found there was no room, so the driver, young HES girl, said to me, come and sit with me in the cab. So while I was in the cab, we got talking and chatting, and she said, do you know where you're going? So I said, no, as far as I know, I'm Carlisle. There must be a depot here. She said, no, you're going to Northern Ireland. But that was a bigger shock than anything. I mean, Northern Ireland to me was like going to China. I mean, the furthest I'd been as a young lad was, I think, was Bridlington and holidays. But anyway, we went in these barracks. We had a meal. We was just sat around talking until it got dark, because with troop movements, there was no movement. So about 9 or 10 o'clock, we went back on the trucks, back to the station, on the train. But I had no idea of distance, how we was going to get to Ireland then. We didn't know whether it was going north or south. But we found out we were going north, and it got colder and colder as we went north onto Stranraer, which was opposite land, which was a shortish distance between the two countries. By that time, it was early morning. Then we boarded the boat, landed at Larne, onto the train, and worked our way south to, I believe it was Ballymena, very near the mountains of Mourne. There I did the 6 weeks training there, preliminary training.
What was that like?
To me it was, that was more exciting to me than being in Hull during the war, I think, you know. Different things, meeting comrades there. I enjoyed that, really.
How were you treated by the people in charge of the training?
Oh, very good. To me, I think there must have been North African veterans. I'm almost certain there was. Oh, very good. The NCOs are very good. I found so, anyway. I really enjoyed it.
Any bullying?
No. No bullying. None at all. It was good.
Were you able to do the things they wanted you to do?
Yes. Yes, I was, yeah. Yes, it's merely marching and preliminary digging trenches and things like that. No, I enjoyed that, yeah. I did.
And then what?
Then we did our 6 weeks. Then we moved from there to Richmond in North Yorkshire, the Gallagate camp.
Were you in a regiment by now?
Well, I believe I was, but we didn't get our... I can't, you know, that's one little thing what escapes me from there. I think it must have been, because the older veterans in the East Yorkshire Regiment, when I've had conversations with them, a lot of them went through Gallagate camp. So I possibly was in the regiment then. I did 6 weeks there.
What happened at Richmond?
Well, more or less the same thing, but more advanced. We're doing weapon training there on the range, more physical route marches, 5 mile runs, battle tactics then, crawling through and attacking, marching, drills.
Crawling through what?
Well, it's crawling through fields, and you know where they'd say, well, there's a little rise up there, and you've got an enemy machine gun post up there, or it's an enemy position like, and doing the old crawling forward under battle tactics, and then right, lads, bayonets out and charge up positions, things like that.
Did Long they use live ammunition?
No, not there. No, no. Then long route marches. We did the 120-mile route marches in a week with incidents on the way.
Incidents?
Well, yes. You'd be going through the country. It was all in the country, on the maybe the Yorkshire moors and things like that, where you'd be going across the fields and the moors, and then your officer would come right and say, right, now, lads, you've got a little hill up there and you've got an enemy's position up there, and you've done a few mile route marching, you know, and then I want you to take out that position. Then you'd do the old charge, shouting your lungs out with your bayonets in front.
Under what kind of conditions were you living at Gallagate camp?
Oh, that was good. It was in I think it was in stone barracks, very sparse stone barracks with about maybe 30 bunk beds in it, you know. But they're very good actually. But this would be in it would be in the summer really, because it's very warm. It would be from end of June, 6 week, it'd be in the middle of August time. So I remember it was very nice weather then.
Any incidents that happened to you at Richmond?
Not really. The worst instance I had was being stung by a bumblebee in my arm. Just crawling through the grass. I got excused duties for about 3 days because I remember I didn't report it, you see, and of course my arm come up, and we've done a bit of drill then, and of course I couldn't do it properly, and of course the corporal come over and said, what's wrong, you know, in his way, and when he explained, like, he said, all right, report to the MO, like, so.
And then?
Then we got a short leave from there, and that time, by that time, had been the 3 months, so I got, and, you know, I can't remember coming, I know we had a leave from there, but I can't remember coming home. But then, back from leave, on the train again, up north, onto, near the Cheviots, was stationed in a little village called Long Framlington, which was, I don't know how far it was, the nearest inhabitation was a place called Morpeth, Northumberland. But no, that was very rough there.
In what sense?
Well, the Nissen huts there was very sparse. There was big, there was like lats in the end, it was all open, very cold then. Because by that time we were getting into October, November time, you know. and very cold. We had the old pot-bellied stove where we used to get red hot. The bunk beds was very sparse, where we had palliasses filled with straw, which used to change every so often. I don't know, every week or 2 weeks. That's where you had a bit of laugh there, because I also remember we used to go into this, I think it was a mission, old mission up full of straw. Well, we had these palliasses, which was like this old striped yellow and blue, just a long bag with a with tassels at the end where you used to tie it when you'd loaded them. But the laugh was what some of the lads who used to just bang straw in, straw in, straw in, and they used to end up like a camel's hump, you know. Some of the lads didn't put enough in, so when you laid on it, you was on the bedboard, it was just lats in you, on your bunk, you know. And someone, when they got in, they were that hard, used to roll out of bed, it's packed too much, which was, to me, was a great laugh. But that was very rough that time. Yeah, it was snowing and railing, raining and gales. And of course, she was out in all weathers.
Was your health affected?
No. I was very, very agile and strong in those days. My height now, I think I was about 5'3" when I got called up. But no, I was very strong. I had a job work from school from 14-year-old to getting up. It was in a baking warehouse, and I was handling sides of bacon, and I was very strong for my age then. I could do a man's work. Well, I was doing a man's work then at 14, 15-year-old. I was lifting bales. Some of the bales of bacon was, I could lift anything between 10 and 12 stone. Carry them, you know. But each side of bacon in those days was anything between 56 pound and 100 weight, because we was getting English. We couldn't get bacon from Holland and Denmark like we did now. Well, a lot of the bacon coming in was from Canada and America, and the Leith Lens ships. And of course, you've got these American hogs. Some of the sides of bacon was weighing anything up to 120, 130 pound, and like the Canadian bacon.
So you were doing that in the early years of the war?
The early years of the war, yes. I was doing fire watching at the warehouse where I worked. When I was 16, when the air raids were still going on, it was a three-story building, very high in the old town near the pier, and they had a platform built on the flat roof up top. And a lot of the times, the air raid used to sound, but you didn't always get an air raid in those days. It didn't actually used to affect Hull. They might have been at Grimsby or passing over, because Hull was a passage to Manchester, you see, from Holland. It was a straight line. And to save everybody going in shelters, one of us used to go on top, and we used to spot in there. And we used to wait until we could hear actually the guns or the bombing in wherever, Grimsby or anywhere like that, before we pressed a button which sounded the alarm for the all the staff to go into shelters. And then we used to do fire watching certain nights. We used to stay, we used to go to work. When you finished work, you used to go home, then maybe go back about 7 or 8 o'clock. You used to sleep in the office somewhere. We used to have bunk beds, and then our job was, if the air raids went, so we had raids, we were to watch out for incendiaries and whatever, you know. That went on.
What was the name of the firm?
Hull Supply Company.
Where was it?
Blanket Row, which was it was a third street from the pier itself, from the Humber.
Were the premises of that firm hit?
Yes, was actually. We did have a sugar warehouse where we used to store all the sugar. It was just across the yard from the main building, and that was hit. Of course, there was a load of tons of sugar went up then. But then we had the, used to have near misses where the, on the bank where I was sitting, with a roof that went up and down, you know. And that often used to go in. We used to have damage in there.
So, coming back to Long Framlington, can you tell me what happened next?
Well, this was 10 weeks intensive training, where we had to learn everything that went on, apart from marching. We had to learn, apart from rifles, machine guns, Bren guns, anti-tank weapons, like the Piat. You had to learn mines, all the German mines, Telemann, shoe mines, anti-personnel mines, all the, most of the weapons what we'd have to face. 2-inch mortars. Aircraft. Recognition. Ground craft. Field craft. What else now? I can't remember half thing now, but everything attributing to war. The way mines worked, you know, anti-tank mines, as I say, and anti-personnel was the main ones what we had to learn about. Shoe mines, box mines, telemines, you name it.
What advice were you given about the mines?
Well, we had to learn how to recognise them, what they did. Like the main infantry man was the, well, we had a word for it, which was a rude word, which was a man which was buried just under the surface, which had three little prongs protruding, which was mainly for grass in that area. Whereas if you was walking and you touch one of these prongs, at that time the man would be under your feet. And that was primed to blow up the minute you touched that prong, and it used to rise, blow up to about 3 foot and then explode, and it was full of ball bearings, which took your lower part away.
So what rude word did you use?
Well, we called it a debollocker, which was where the man, where you used to get the main injuries, which was, you know, as you say, about that height, low stomach area.
How did this affect morale to learn about all this?
Well, we had to learn it, so it was for our own benefit. Thankfully, I never come across these things.
And were you with a battalion at this time?
No, I wasn't in a battalion at that time. We hadn't been given no... we were just in like a platoon at that time.
Where did the officers come from?
The
what kind of officers did you have?
Well, at that, I think there was good officers, but mainly we... it was our NCOs we did the training with. I mean, the officers used to come with us, but... We was more or less entailed with the NCOs, with the corporals. The corporal was the main one who looked after us, I think. We had the sergeants and the lance corporals and such, but I think the corporal, as has been stated, the corporal was always the main man in the war. I mean, what do they call him?
Italy
was a corporal, yeah. And one, the other one, not the... The French one.
Napoleon.
Napoleon. I think they called him the little corporal, didn't they? Well, I always found out the corporal was the main man. He was always a dog's buddy. I don't know about anybody else.
Who was your corporal?
I couldn't remember no names. No.